from the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Oran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Hour number two, this long journey this afternoon. You and me up until 3:40 this afternoon. Nats and the Milwaukee Brewers at that time. Charlie Slows and Dave Jangler, as always, bringing you all the action of Nationals baseball. They are, without question, the best in the business. And a couple of you have asked me, are there ways to listen to them? Certainly you can have the Odyssey app. If you're not, you know, obviously in a car or anything like that. And what you can do with that, and this is a number of Navy fans actually do this during the course of the football season, you can stop the game on your DVR until the Odyssey app audio catches up to the game. And therefore, you can essentially have Charlie and Dave doing your play-by-play while watching it on TV if you choose to go that route, because they are the best in the business. Coming up during the college football season, we are the home of your Virginia Tech Hokies right here on 106.7 The Fan. The Atlantic Coast Conference, or whatever you might want to call it, is going to have a rather unique look this coming season. And to help talk about that and more with college football, it's my good friend Joe Miller from the It's College Football podcast. Joseph, how are you on this Saturday? A rare day where you and I are both inside of our homes. That's an upset itself.
Well, I was up in early taking my son to the University of Maryland soccer camp. So I was up early doing that, and I'll be there later. It's like from like 8 a.m. to 8 p.m. So it's a long day for him over the next couple of days.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Certainly, I mean, look, for soccer, there are any number of places you can take him. As we know, that's one of the best soccer programs in the country. Good place for him and others to learn from. Maryland used to be in the ACC, Joe, and when you look at the ACC landscape this year, if you're a Virginia Tech fan, and we know Hokies fans love to travel, you're going to Vanderbilt, you're going to Old Dominion, you're going to Miami. That all makes sense. You know, you get an SEC opponent with like academic, likes about both schools. And then October the 5th, the Hokies will play a conference game in Palo Alto, California. And this is where college football gets kind of weird this year, Joe. Virginia Tech at Stanford is now an Atlantic Coast Conference game. They might as well call it an all-coast conference or something like that, as it literally stretches east to west, Atlantic to Pacific this year for the first time. Weird, but I guess it's kind of the sign of the times of where we are.
Well, it's funny, too. You look at the ACC this season, and I think it's one of those leagues where you look at it and you go, well, it's all up for grabs. I mean, I was just looking at some things the other day, sort of just going back over the, it's hard to keep track of everything, trying to figure out who went where. And, Virginia Tech's one of those teams that really didn't change that much. We saw them last year in their bowl game. We did that game. And, they haven't, they're one of the teams that really, you look at the dynamics of their team, them and Clemson really hasn't changed a tremendous amount. You look at Florida State and Miami bringing in two, when you talk about the transfer portal, two high, much talked about quarterback transfers in there. And you look at Clemson, you look at Virginia Tech, they haven't really changed a ton. Louisville, the schedule has changed, is something we've talked about a lot. I think that's one of the reasons that they had a lot of success. Yeah, but Virginia Tech, on paper, you look at the schedule and you go, where's the biggest pitfall? Obviously, you get Clemson at home, the toughest road game, probably at Miami. But look, we've talked about Miami, for a decade now. And they're still the same sort of 6-win, 7-8-win team. I believe it when I see it that people are putting them up there at the top of the ACC discussion. you know, I think it's a pretty flawed, you know, coaching staff there. Obviously, they got the quarterback they were looking for, but, you know, we were saying that a couple years ago when De'Eriq King got there, and they were like, oh, my God, you didn't see this guy. You know, what is he going to do at Miami? And, look, Cam Ward had a tremendous amount of success at Washington State, but he also had some games that were duds, too. You know, you can make a decent argument that maybe the receiving core at Washington State was maybe better than what Miami's had over the last couple of years, and they're bringing in guys trying to figure out, you know, they've got some guys that Restrepo's played some and that has had some success. But I'm not one to sit there and guarantee that Miami's going to be good this year because simply the last 20, 25 years, well, at least 20 years, has said they're not going to be very good. So when you look at that Virginia Tech schedule, I mean, I think when – look, we touched on this the other day when we talked about it as well. You got to change your mindset a little bit when you talk about college football this season because you got a new playoff, so you got to have more teams involved. And because of the schedules, just the dynamic of the schedule, like we have this big celebration every year when the NFL puts out their schedule and we go over and we talk about – but honestly – there's nothing more important in college football than the schedule, right? You know, and you get a say in some of that, but now with these massive bloated conferences, you look at a Michigan team who's coming off a national championship, give them credit for that, but have literally played maybe three meaningful games the last couple of years, maybe four, where they were really in games that you would have considered, hey, this is a touchdown or less kind of ball game. They're going to play four of those this season. So the schedule plays a big part of it. And if you're a Virginia Tech fan, you look at that schedule and you go, that's workable. That's doable. You know, especially with guys coming back, at the quarterback position.
Let's talk about him. Look, when obviously you and I broadcast to the Military Bowl and Kyron Jones was fantastic. The Baylor transfer really took to Tech, took the staff. The staff took to him. And by the end of the season, Joe, I thought he was one of the more exciting players overall in college football. Comes from a great football pedigree in a great state down in Pearland, Texas. We know that's one of the great – that's an even greater level of Texas high school football in that area. So this is a young man that has the pedigree, and boy, was he really good in that bowl game against what traditionally is a very good Tulane defense. And I think Tech fans have every right to be excited because, as you mentioned, the schedule is not exactly murderer's row coming into this year. That Miami game, as you mentioned, without question, is the toughest road game. But if they somehow navigate, you know, and Marshall will be dangerous. Old Dominion might be dangerous just because of rivalry. But
Virginia Tech's not at a point where they look at their schedule and say that W, chalk it up. I mean, it wasn't that long ago that they were losing to Old Dominion. So it's a manageable schedule, but it's also like you can't say, oh, that's a guaranteed 9 wins right now.
Yeah, no doubt. And obviously they get Virginia at home at the end of the season. But thoughts on Drones, because young man I thought really acquitted himself very well, and by the end of last year, Tech fans were really excited, and obviously we saw him in one of his best moments of the season.
Yeah, you know, one of the cool aspects of what we did last year doing the bowl game was we were able to talk to the coaching staff and just get a sense, you know, ultimately you sort of filter things from what they say and you get a good idea of what they think of the guy. And I think what I got out of our conversations were early in the season they were a little bit unsure about him and sort of what his potential was, but by the end of the season they were convinced that he was the guy that you know, could win them, you know, a conference championship. And I think the biggest thing looking back on him last season, especially when you put it in the context of what they saw with Grant Wells, was he threw three interceptions. And I think ultimately the guy protected the football. I don't think, you know, he's not a top of the line running quarterback, but I think he reads his blocks incredibly. The one thing that watching him on tape last year headed into that bowl game, the thing that I was most impressed with him was he read his blocks incredibly well. I mean, he set them up very well, and he's explosive, but he's not, you know, the upper echelon type, you know, Jaden Daniels type, Lamar Jackson type runners. He's really good at it, but I think he sets up blocks very well, knows the running game, knows where to go in the running game, and that's huge. And by the end of the season, you've got a guy that was simply not making mistakes, who was running the offense, and they sort of modified what they were doing throughout the season to do what he does best. And, you know, you look at, there's really, when you look at the numbers from last season, I mean, tremendous amount of success down the stretch. Now, he didn't have a bunch of passing yards, but in that Tulane game, but that game was a monsoon, basically. And he did what he needed to do, made a couple of plays in that game, passing, but majority were big running plays. And you look at what they have coming back, I think, you know, that's not a team that's dipped a ton into the portal. You know, when we talked to him last year, it was sort of about accentuating some of the things that they already had on the roster. They weren't looking to revamp things because they were a pretty young team. And I think you saw the offensive line was a little bit of a question mark for them last season. Again, they played incredibly well against the good Tulane defense. Now, that defense was missing some pieces. You know, Tulane had some guys sitting out of that game. But, you know, I think they have as much a shout as anybody, especially when you factor in that schedule, to have any sort of claims to the ACC this season. I really think it's up for grabs. You know, there's some good returning quarterbacks within the conference, but and Drones is right up there. And I think if you can limit those turnovers, run the football, play good defense, it sort of beckons back to what we talked about with Virginia Tech football in the past. You put yourself in a situation where you're going to be competing for a conference championship.
Look, we knew Fuente pretty well, obviously, from his time at Memphis. And what happened there was really pretty disappointing, to be honest, because we saw him coach some good football. Having Brent Pry have to recover from that, take over from that, repair some things in the recruiting areas, I think there's a bright future there with Brent Pry. I know each year is different now because your roster, as we know, there are rosters that basically turn over each season. It's a little bit different, but I think there's a bright future there with Brent Pry in Tech. I was really pleased with the progress and the direction they're going.
Oh, there's no doubt. I mean, I think, you know, we talked about it a ton. You know, they could never figure out the running game. The quarterback situation was always seemingly, you know, kind of back and forth. They couldn't find the right guy. I mean, you know, you could argue in the Fuente era, you know what, their top running back, their top quarterback, both were transfers from Kansas, Willis and then Herbert. So they were never able to build that. And I think with Brent Pry, he's had a chance to build some things here too. I think there was the expectations were pretty low last season for what they were able, you know, to accomplish at the end of the day. I think a lot of people were excited about that. And I think that's huge for them to build within from that. And you definitely get a sense in talking to that coaching staff that they think the right way to do this is still through high school, you know, through the high school ranks, is building through those recruiting. And I think most college football programs see that that's the way to go. I mean, last year's national championship, you know, Michigan, they built through recruiting. Georgia, you know, the top teams are not, you know, are not building through the transfer portal. You know, you see a team like Colorado was an abject failure last year. You know, they built through the transfer portal. That's not the necessarily recipe for high level success of the college football world. Some teams were able to do it. SMU, you mentioned, you know, the new look ACC. That was a team that completely revamped their defense, brought in, I think, 9 new transfers that started for them last season. They were able to do it. Long-term success, though, I still think most college coaches would agree that you have to build through the high school ranks.
Yeah, still. I mean, look, if you're going to build roster depth, that's where it's got to come from. Then you kind of use the portal to enhance, you know, maybe some of your more glaring needs, maybe areas that you missed on guys. And, you know, look, I mean, Miami's quarterback situation, you know, 2 years ago, it looked like Tyler Van Dyke was a can't-miss guy. And now they've brought in Cam Ward to try and rescue the Hurricanes. But is it more, and you brought it up earlier, is it more about Ward or is it more about Mario Cristobal and that staff? Because now he's got no excuses. He's back home in his most fertile recruiting connections ground, and there appears to be resources there for NIL at Miami, as we've seen in high-profile moments during the course of the year. But I mean, if it doesn't happen for him, can we finally get off this hype train where he was always one of the top assistant coaches? You know that, Joe. We hear that every year. This is the next great head coach. Well, that's never really happened for him yet. He's never really had that winning signature moment, even when he was out at Oregon, in my opinion, as a head coach.
Yeah, and look, they were 4-0 on, you know, seconds away, like 90 seconds away from being 5-0 in that Georgia Tech game. And he does not kneel. They lose that game, and they go from 4-0 to 3-6 the rest of the way. And that's significant. Look, they were competitive in most every game last year. You know, they've had some games in the past where they've lost and they weren't. I think you go back to last year, maybe the NC State game was probably the game that, you know, they just, you know, for whatever reason, they just couldn't move the football that game. And it sort of like, I think, was the final maybe straw for Van Dyke at some point for this team. But, you know, the thing that you liked about what Cristobal was bringing to Miami was the number one thing that they had lacked in the years that they was they struggled on the offensive line. They struggled on the defensive line. They had some guys that looked like they could play, but interior line, they could never get right. I mean, it's ultimately what we look at, you know, at college football, the teams that have the best offensive defensive lines, again, not to belabor the point, but, you know, your Georgias, your Michigans, you know, these great offensive defensive lines, they're the teams that kind of run things in the college football world, and they can never get that mixed right. I'm not saying that they've got some, you know, they got some running backs there. They got some wide receivers. And obviously Cam Ward, you know, a tremendous amount of success. I think a lot of people were surprised that he didn't go to the NFL last off season. But, you know, you look at his success at Washington State, you know, again, there's ups and downs. I mean, you look at his back half of the season last year, they scored 7 points in a loss to Stanford. They lost to Cal last season. You know, they lost, you know, they started off 4-0. They lost to a pretty bad UCLA team. He was pretty horrible in that game. I wanted to look up the numbers. 19 of 39 for 197, one touchdown and two interceptions against UCLA in that game. Then they come back and they get destroyed by Arizona. Look, there were some great games where he was fantastic last year. He threw for over 400 yards at Autzen against that Oregon team that was, you know, arguably one of the top teams in the country. But he also had some duds last season too. So I think he's going to be fine in the ACC. I think he'll be up there amongst the top quarterbacks. But again, the Cristobal way has not been unleashing these guys. It's not been unleashing these quarterbacks. It's not been, you know, Cam Ward's used to throwing. Look, I'm looking at his numbers last year. He threw over 45 attempts in five games last year. He's not going to throw 45 times this year. So you have to, you know, especially when we talk about statistically looking at numbers, when you're talking about a guy that, you know, is throwing the ball 500 times in a season, he's going to put up numbers, you know. He's going to have decent numbers that you look at and go, oh, well, that's pretty good. I don't foresee them changing what they do philosophically, offensively, a ton where he's thrown the ball 45-plus times. So I just don't see him throwing for 350 a bunch of times in that system at Miami unless they want to open things up a little bit more.
Yeah, no doubt about that. You got time to do one more segment?
Yeah, sure, no problem.
All right. We'll tell you, look, Cam Ward's a guy you're going to hear in the Heisman Trophy race at some point, especially if he gets off to a good start. If you're going to wager on the Heisman, we'll tell you some of the names you need to look out for, maybe some dark horses, and all the good pub lately for the University of Maryland in recruiting. What's going to mean for them in a even more crowded Big Ten conference coming up? We'll talk about that and more with Joe Miller when we return right here on 106.7 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Aran, Puck's sports correspondent, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity, where I will take you inside the executive suites and owner's boxes that run the entire sports business. Twice a week, I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media and give you a window into the inside conversations that are happening throughout sports media. So be sure to follow and listen to The Varsity Podcast, available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Welcome back. Pitto Sports with you till 3:40. It'll be the Nats and the Milwaukee Brewers at that time. Appreciate you being aboard on a Saturday afternoon. Coming up, we'll have plenty of time for your calls at 1-800-636-1067. Talking Heisman odds with my man Joe Miller. Really interesting. Dylan Gabriel has vaulted to the top at FanDuel right now in terms of the Heisman betting odds. He and Carson Beck, Joe, are at plus 750. And I understand it from this category. You're going to have two guys that are going to have opportunity. They're going to play on high-profile teams that likely win a lot of games, and thus they're going to be in that spotlight the most. They're going to have two marketing machines behind them at their respective institutions. What do we make of Dylan Gabriel and Carson Beck at the top of that list with Quinn Ewers, I would say, a relatively in the neighborhood third?
I would say, first and foremost, college football lacks a star man at the top of the table right now. I mean, I don't know how many people, I mean, that really know, I mean, we that know a tremendous amount about Carson Beck, or for that matter, Dylan Gabriel, who we've seen at UCF, we've seen at Oklahoma, and now we'll see him at Oregon next season, which is kind of crazy to think of when we talk, just to, as we talked about, you know, before, this the new way that college football is seemingly going. I mean, I think, look, when you talk about odds at the beginning of the season, we're really talking about a popularity contest at that point. I mean, for those top guys, we're talking about guys that we've seen before do it in the college football landscape, and whether or not, you know, that, and you're talking about, you know, for Gabriel, I think the part of it too is Bo Nix. I mean, Bo Nix threw, you know, 45 touchdowns last season. He was brilliant. So I think the sense is, well, Dylan Gabriel walk right into that system and will put up similar numbers for them next year. I mean, I think that's why you see some guys that we really haven't proven anything, you know, get some discussion there at the top of the list. I mean, but, you know, Beck last season, again, 24 touchdowns, 6 interceptions, nearly 4,000 yards. But I don't even know if we talked about Carson Beck a ton last season. So, you know, you'll have to build that hype machine up. And Georgia, to me, has always been a team more than an individual. Yes, guys, you know, had big seasons there. And obviously people got to know Stetson Bennett, what he was able to do. But the other part thing for Georgia is, and guys in the past for them, whether it's been running back or wide receiver, is generally speaking, they're up, you know, 42-7 in the third quarter. And, you know, they tend to not, you know, put it on teams as much as maybe some other teams go. But as far as names go, I mean, they've got to be your top guys. I mean, you have a lack of big name guys coming back in college football. So the more, you know, recognizable names, as you throw Cam Ward in there, you throw Dylan Gabriel in there, you know, Shedeur Sanders, Quinn Ewers, those guys will be talked about. And it is kind of remarkable how, you know, things change each and every year, that you're looking at a couple guys that are, you know, transfers that are your top guys up there. But I think it's one of those things that's wide open. I mean, I was looking, when you talked about it, I was looking at the odds. I mean, you know, there's some good, I mean, almost everybody's good value, because you're talking the favorite at plus 700, plus 800. You know, you're looking at, I mean, it is really a wide open, you know, race. I look at guys like that I would think that would be higher looking at things. I thought, you know, Jackson Dart might be a little bit higher. He gives you a little bit more of that, you know, run pass option. And a guy I really like that I don't think as many people like, that I would argue with you is one of the best quarterbacks in the country, and I don't think he gets mentioned in that, is Cade Klubnik. I think if I was to put money on somebody, it would be the Clemson quarterback. I think he can be spectacular. I think he is as talented as anybody that plays college football at the quarterback position. He just has not had a lot of weapons, but to see him sort of in the same realm as a Miller Moss or a DJ Uiagalelei, that to me, that seems, you know, that seems off. But, you know, maybe Miller Moss comes in and, you know, throws for, you know, similar numbers as Caleb Williams. I doubt that. But, I look at a guy like Klubnik, down the list are a guy like Jackson Dart, who's a little bit higher than Klubnik, but I would look at those guys as guys that I think would have a shot of, and maybe even a Riley Leonard because he's got the Notre Dame name. I just don't know if they're going to, again, score as many points or put the numbers up that maybe some other quarterbacks would.
Can Travis Hunter win it without Shedeur Sanders winning it in front of him?
I mean, he's got a better shot than maybe some other receivers because he's going to play on the defensive side of the football field. But Pete, Colorado's not going to be good. I just don't see it. they weren't a good football team last year. They swap out a lot of the offensive line and the defensive line. The running game is very much a question mark for me. You got to win the Heisman Trophy, at least in my opinion. And I just don't see them winning. I mean, I think if they won five games, it would be a successful season to some degree for them. I just don't know. I just don't know if they're going to win enough to, I mean, and Travis Hunter is a fantastic player. Is he one of the best players in the country? I don't know. I mean, I think, you know, ultimately he's a guy that would look great as a slot wide receiver in the NFL. I don't know if, and maybe I'm slighting him. I don't know if they're going to win enough to put him in the shop window per se.
My long shot, just because, and again, what hurts him is his coach left. If he was running the same system, my long shot selection would be Noah Fifita because he just did amazing things.
Sure.
When he took over at Arizona last year, but Jed Fish, of course, going to Washington changes all that. In my mind, so it becomes a much riskier calculation.
Yeah.
So,
you know, I mean, I throw Jalen Daniels, the Kansas quarterback, out there. I mean, when he was healthy last year, he was putting up ridiculous numbers. Now, again, Kansas, what they're going to be like win-wise this season, I think they're going to be – his receivers are back. He's got a couple of big receivers back for them. So if you're talking about long shots, you know, he's there, and I just don't know. The funny thing is, Pete, is like, can a running back even win this award anymore? You look at some of the names up there at running back position, I just don't know. You know,
I mean, Ollie Gordon's going to get the ball, as Mike Gundy told us, 50 times a game.
I was going to say, Gordon is the one guy of the top running backs that is almost guaranteed to get the ball 20 to 25 times. I don't know. You look at Judkins. I mean, he's going to split time with Henderson. Like, is he getting the ball 25 times a game? I don't know. I don't know if these guys, the running backs that are at the top of these lists, I just don't know if they're going to get the ball enough. The one guy, I think, as you mentioned, is Gordon from Oklahoma State.
Yeah, no doubt about it. Let you out on this. Maryland's had an unbelievable month recruiting-wise in the DMV. A lot of great local products, of course, including the very polished quarterback from Archbishop Spalding, who I've gotten to know a little bit, Malik Washington, great young man, really good quarterback. And look, Mike and his staff, Joe, have delivered on that part of the equation. Ultimately, though, with the way that Big Ten looks even stronger now with the program additions, you know, we were talking about, you know, how ironic yours was at Ohio State. Howard, who's right behind him in the Heisman odds, will be the quarterback at Ohio State this year. Them and Michigan have been the two programs of late. They've at least had a pulse with Penn State at times. But ultimately now the Big Ten looks even stronger, and these recruiting wins are going to have to translate to on-field wins. And, I mean, how much tougher does that now get realistically with the four additions from the Pac-12 that just came in, all with pedigree?
Well, I was talking to somebody the other day, and they were talking about how, you know, we were talking about the Big Ten and sort of where Maryland fits in the equation, but this is a guy that had a connection to Rutgers. He was like, look, we're killing it recruiting-wise in basketball, and we've done a really good job in football as well. And I don't know, you know, we don't talk a lot about what they're doing NLI-wise, but they must be doing something because, you know, they have some of the best recruits in basketball. They've gotten some guys at football. And you just talk about, like, those kind of the teams in the – and I think the interesting thing is Washington. Like, where do they fit in this equation? Because they've been up at the top. You got Jed Fish. Is it going to take them? They lose almost, of the playmakers, they lose a ton. How's he going to do? He did great at Arizona. What's the time limit there? But I think you look at that middle section right now of the Big Ten, and when we're talking 18 teams, we're talking like 9, 10, 11. That's sort of where Maryland, Rutgers, Minnesota, where's Michigan State? I mean, it's so compact there in the middle of the conference of teams that I think have done a pretty good job here the last couple of years. I mean, it's such a battle. It is such a battle. I mean, the talent they added to the Big Ten and what some of these teams are doing, like you've got all these, not all these, but you got Jonathan Smith at Michigan State. You've got new coaching, as we mentioned, at Washington. And you look at Maryland, who's done, you know, reasonably well. You know, I liked what I saw from MJ Morris at NC State. I don't know if he's as good as some people expect him to be. I know they weren't crushed that he left, and they're happy with the quarterback position that they have this year. But man, that the middle of that Big Ten with some new coaches at UCLA, with Michigan State, and Washington. I mean, it's going to be fascinating.
Awesome stuff, big fella. As always, enjoy the rest of your hot and humid Saturday out here in the DMV.
Thank you, sir. Will do. Talk to you later, man.
Got it. Joe Miller, as always, fantastic when we talk about the sport of college football. And look, there's a lot to talk about there. And look, it's a good time for Maryland fan. And Joe talked about it. Look, Maryland went in and hired, and I'll talk about it when we come back. Maryland made a commitment in that NIL category. We'll talk about what that is. Also take your calls, your show the rest of the way, 1-800-636-1067. That's how you get to us between now and 3:40. If you're out there driving around, let's talk about it right here on 106.7 The Fan. 1-800-636-1067. That's how you reach us here between now and 3:40 this afternoon. Look forward to making your acquaintance. As always, you know, I'm at Pete Medhurst on Twitter. I keep it simple there as well. Nats and the Brewers coming up at 3:40 this afternoon. Keep it locked in. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler will have the call of game two of that series. Grant Paulson is at the Futures game. And in addition to Dylan Cruz, Brady House being down there for the festivities, James Triantos and Bryce Eldridge from Madison High School. Obviously, Bryce High pick for the Giants. They are down there as well at the Futures game. And not sure if Grant caught up with them enough to get an interview that you might hear next week on their show. But good to see the locals also shining brightly down there as well for that one. So congratulations to those two guys. I mean, look, Eldridge was a guy that could play the field. He could pitch. Similar to what Bubba Chandler was doing in the Pirates organization, and Chandler decided, you know what, I throw 100 miles an hour. I probably don't need to worry about playing another position. But we were talking about, you know, Skeen starting the All-Star game, and Jones has gotten hurt, so he's out. He's probably going to be out till sometime in August, it looks like, for the Pirates. And with that injury, we may see Bubba Chandler sooner rather than later for the Pirates, and he's another guy that he is in that Skeens-Jones class because, again, he's going to be another Pirate guy that do they hang on to? Can they find a way? Will they make a commitment to signing him, you know, long-term? I mean, if you let these guys go eventually, you know, that's kind of been the MO there in Pittsburgh. Remember, they had Garrett Cole at one time? Imagine if they had Garrett Cole to go with Paul Skeens right now. But you know, Chandler was a third-round pick, and he is crushing it right now in the minor leagues at Altoona. I watched him pitch. There were Nat scouts at that game watching him pitch at Bowie a few weeks ago. And he's a guy that throws 100 miles an hour with a wipeout slider. And I will be keenly interested to see what that Pirates – rotation looks like eventually. And in his last three, because he only pitched two innings in his last outing because he was going to the Futures game, didn't allow any hits and struck out two. But already in the minor leagues, you know, minor leagues, they like to throw four, they'll let him throw five. But in his three starts before he got to that last one, he threw seven innings, struck out 10, 6 2/3, struck out 11, 7 2/3, struck out 7, And in those three games, he only had two total walks. So it's another hard-throwing guy throwing 100 with a wipeout 86-mile-an-hour slider that could end up in that Pirates rotation. It's going to make them very tough going forward, especially if it's not a long-term, a la Tommy John-type injury to Jones, the other good starter that they already have there at that level. It's kind of really excited Pittsburgh baseball again, but we've seen them the last couple of years fall into that category. Now, we saw Jackson Rutledge, who's battled, you know, all kinds of he and Cavalli both had big league stuff. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that they both had big league stuff. And I'd written this down. This is why I kept saying Cavalli earlier, because I'd written it down and it just right in front of me. But, you know, Rutledge, you know, first round pick, played at the great JUCO program at San Jacinto down there, which has always been good in baseball, always been good in basketball for several years down there. Eventually, you know, matriculated briefly to Arkansas. And, you know, this is a guy that has the stuff. You saw it last night. Should have gotten out of that five inning. Should have been able to pick up a victory out of that game last night, if not for the unfortunate error by C.J. Abrams. But there is, even though those lefties that have been great this year, and obviously Irvin, who's been fantastic from the right side, this group has arrived a little sooner than maybe even the Nats thought. Maybe they didn't think Parker would be this good. Certainly Herz has shown flashes so far. You know, they've got some guys that, if health will bless them, that have big league stuff. And I think it's fascinating to see how good and young this rotation possibly could be. And do the Nationals take a page out of the Orioles book, what the Orioles did this year by adding a Corbin Burns to that rotation? Remember, Burns, I believe, is going to be a free agent in the offseason. You know, do they go out and look for someone like that to kind of anchor this staff? Or do they have confidence that Gore or Irvin is that guy and go for somewhat of that second-tier veteran starter? Or if everybody stays healthy, you have Rutledge, you have Cavalli, you have Irvin, Parker, Gore, amongst others, that are competing for jobs. All of a sudden, pitching competition at a key spot for the Nationals looks a lot better going into camp next year than it has the last couple of seasons. And you never know, again, what a trade might bring you as well with the draft coming up and the trade deadline here also within this month in Major League Baseball. 1-800-636-1067. Pete on Sports with you till 3:40 right here on 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. You and me till 3:40 this afternoon. Max Ames is doing all the hard work. Make sure you say hello when you call in this afternoon. 1-800-636-1067. Couple of wacky stories to talk about. There was a story I read on Robert Latall's great site, Black Sports Online. Local story here, it turns out, about how these two ladies essentially had this guy as a sugar daddy and allegedly knocked him off, cut his thumb off so they could still use his thumbprint to keep accessing his cash from his Cash App while they were, while the person was obviously dead. You talk about things, the things that people will do to access cash these days. Just ask that corridor right now. I mean, look, but that corridor on Route 50 between Annapolis and D.C. is a dangerous place right now. A lot of bad things that are happening in that area. Our man, look, if you listen to me, I've told you time and time again, I think Tyreek Hill is the most exciting player to watch in pro football right now. Apparently, Tyreek Hill is the most exciting man, though, to get in the bedroom. A lot of women have apparently entrusted, allegedly, the services of Mr. Hill of late. I'm sure you've seen the headlines by now. But Tyreek Hill apparently right now is juggling five different pregnancies or five different kids. Another lady, a DNA test proved he's the father of this child. And his wife is also pregnant at the same time. So the 30-year-old wide receiver could have as many as 10 children around the nation if all the rumors are to be true. His wife, the wellness influencer herself, Keita Vaccaro, is also expecting a baby, which would be their first together. And a Broward County judge ruled this week that the 8-time Pro Bowler is the father of Trey Love Hill, who was born on May 2nd of last year. The Tots mom, Kimberly Kaylee Baker, filed a paternity test suit that same month, claiming the newborn was conceived during an August 2022 hookup with Hill. She said she was receiving $2,500 from him each month, but estimated the real cost of caring for their daughter was closer to $10,000 a month. The father has, in fact, demonstrated utter and abject unconcern for the child and wholly failing to act as a parent and completely failing to support the child, according to Baker's alleged petition. Hill didn't contest the results of a DNA test, but argued unsuccessfully that California-based Baker had no grounds to file for paternity in Florida, where he lives and works. A court order published Monday confirms the pair reached a confidential paternity agreement backed by the signing of an NDA. The respondent is the natural and biological father of the child, according to the document. And Hill is already paying $13,500 in monthly child support for his three kids with former fiance Crystal Espinal. So right now, Mr. Hill crushing it on the field, apparently crushing it in the bedrooms around North America, and getting it done right now as the Cheetah continues to be in the news here in this off season. And yet his wife is also, pregnant as well. I could think we could all relate that if that were our households, I'm not sure any of us would be alive to matriculate with so many females and have so many kids and still be married at the same time. But it's a good job if you can get it out there. Tyreek, by the way, $2,500 a month or $10,000 a month. I've raised three kids, and at no time was I making $10,000 a month. I'm just saying. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the number that she wants. She just wants to live that highfalutin lifestyle and using that kid as a pawn in which to do that. But at least according to the courts, Tyreek's going to take care of that child as well, and hopefully he takes care of all of them as he'll continue to make substantial dollars in the National Football League with what he's doing there as well. And by the way, he said his quarterback should be making some big dollars this offseason as well. Coming up top of the hour, your calls, 1-800-636-1067. Talked about a number of different topics. Jaden Daniels, obviously the Nationals with a win in Milwaukee, and of course the debut of Summer League and the young parts for the Wizards, at least on the surface, with a successful debut. That and anything else you have on your mind, let's go. 1-800-636-1067. Pete on Sports with you till 3:40 right here on 106.7 The Fan.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whoops. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
1-800-636-1067. That's how you reach us here between now and 3:40 this afternoon. Look forward to making your acquaintance. As always, you know, I'm at Pete Medhurst on Twitter. I keep it simple there as well. Nats and the Brewers coming up at 3:40 this afternoon. Keep it locked in. Charlie Slows and Dave Jagler will have the call of game two of that series. Grant Paulson is at the Futures game. And in addition to Dylan Cruz, Brady House being down there for the festivities, James Triantos and Bryce Eldridge from Madison High School. Bryce High pick for the Giants. They are down there as well at the Futures game. And not sure if Grant caught up with them enough to get an interview that you might hear next week on their show. But good to see the locals also shining brightly down there as well for that one. So congratulations to those two guys. I mean, look, Eldridge was a guy that could play the field. He could pitch. Similar to what Bubba Chandler was doing in the Pirates organization. And Chandler decided, you know what, I throw 100 miles an hour. I probably don't need to worry about playing another position. But we were talking about, you know, Skeen starting the All-Star game, and Jones has gotten hurt, so he's out. He's probably going to be out till sometime in August, it looks like, for the Pirates. And with that injury, we may see Bubba Chandler sooner rather than later for the Pirates, and he's another guy that he is in that Skeens-Jones class because, again, he's going to be another Pirate guy that do they hang on to? Can they find a way? Will they make a commitment to signing him, you know, long-term? I mean, if you let these guys go eventually, you know, that's kind of been the MO there in Pittsburgh. Remember, they had Garrett Cole at one time. Imagine if they had Garrett Cole to go with Paul Skeens right now. But, you know, Chandler was a third-round pick, and he is crushing it right now in the minor leagues at Altoona. I watched him pitch. There were Nat scouts at that game watching him pitch at Bowie a few weeks ago. And he's a guy that throws 100 miles an hour with a wipeout slider. And I will be keenly interested to see what that Pirates rotation looks like eventually. And in his last three, because he only pitched two innings in his last outing because he was going to the Futures game, didn't allow any hits and struck out two. But already in the minor leagues, you know minor leagues, they like to throw four, they'll let him throw five. But in his three starts before he got to that last one, he threw seven innings, struck out 10, 6 2/3, struck out 11, 7 2/3, struck out 7, and in those three games, he only had two total walks. So it's another hard-throwing guy throwing 100 with a wipeout 86-mile-an-hour slider that could end up in that Pirates rotation. It's going to make them very tough going forward, especially if it's not a long-term, a la Tommy John-type injury to Jones, the other good starter that they already have there at that level. It's kind of really excited Pittsburgh baseball again, but we've seen them the last couple of years fall into that category. Now, we saw Jackson Rutledge, who's battled, you know, all kinds of he and Cavalli both had big league stuff. I mean, I don't think there's any doubt that they both had big league stuff. And I'd written this down. This is why I kept saying Cavalli earlier, because I'd written it down and it just right in front of me. But, you know, Rutledge, you know, a first-round pick, played at the great JUCO program at San Jacinto down there, which has always been good in baseball, always been good in basketball for several years down there. Eventually, you know, matriculated briefly to Arkansas. And, you know, this is a guy, that has the stuff. You saw it last night. Should have gotten out of that five innings. Should have been able to pick up a victory out of that game last night, if not for the unfortunate error by C.J. Abrams. But there is, even though those lefties that have been great this year, and obviously Irvin, who's been fantastic from the right side, this group has arrived a little sooner than maybe even the Nats thought. Maybe they didn't think Parker would be this good. Certainly Hers has shown flashes so far. You know, they've got some guys that, if health will bless them, that have big league stuff. And I think it's fascinating to see how good and young this rotation possibly could be. And do the Nationals take a page out of the Orioles book, what the Orioles did this year by adding a Corbin Burns to that rotation? Remember, Burns, I believe, is going to be a free agent in the offseason. You know, do they go out and look for someone like that to kind of anchor this staff? Or do they have confidence that Gore or Irvin is that guy and go for somewhat of that second-tier veteran starter? Or if everybody stays healthy, you have Rutledge, you have Cavalli, you have Irvin, Parker, Gore, amongst others, that are competing for jobs. All of a sudden, pitching competition at a key spot for the Nationals looks a lot better going into camp next year than it has the last couple of seasons. And you never know, again, what a trade might bring you as well with the draft coming up and the trade deadline here also within this month in Major League Baseball. 1-800-636-1067. Pete on Sports with you till 3:40 right here on 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. You and me till 3:40 this afternoon. Max Ames is doing all the hard work. Make sure you say hello when you call in this afternoon. 1-800-636-1067. Couple of wacky stories to talk about. There was a story I read on Robert Latall's great site, Black Sports Online. Local story here, it turns out, about how these two ladies essentially had this guy as a sugar daddy and allegedly knocked him off, cut his thumb off so they could still use his thumbprint to keep accessing his cash from his Cash App while they were, while the person was obviously dead. you talk about things, the things that people will do to access cash these days. Just ask that corridor right now. I mean, look, but that corridor on Route 50 between Annapolis and D.C. is a dangerous place right now. A lot of bad things that are happening in that area. Our man, look, if you listen to me, I've told you time and time again, I think Tyreek Hill is the most exciting player to watch in pro football right now. Apparently, Tyreek Hill is the most exciting man, though, to get in the bedroom. A lot of women have apparently entrusted, allegedly, the services of Mr. Hill of late. I'm sure you've seen the headlines by now. But Tyreek Hill apparently right now is juggling five different pregnancies or five different kids. Another lady, a DNA test proved he's the father of this child. And his wife is also pregnant at the same time. So the 30-year-old wide receiver could have as many as 10 children around the nation if all the rumors are to be true. His wife, the wellness influencer herself, Keita Vaccaro, is also expecting a baby, which would be their first together. And a Broward County judge ruled this week that the 8-time Pro Bowler is the father of Trey Love Hill, who was born on May 2nd of last year. The Tots mom, Kimberly Kaylee Baker, filed a paternity test suit that same month, claiming the newborn was conceived during an August 2022 hookup with Hill. She said she was receiving $2,500 from him each month, but estimated the real cost of caring for their daughter was closer to $10,000 a month. The father has, in fact, demonstrated utter and abject unconcern for the child and wholly failing to act as a parent and completely failing to support the child, according to Baker's alleged petition. Hill didn't contest the results of a DNA test, but argued unsuccessfully that California-based Baker had no grounds to file for paternity in Florida, where he lives and works. A court order published Monday confirms the pair reached a confidential paternity agreement backed by the signing of an NDA. The respondent is the natural and biological father of the child, according to the document. And Hill is already paying $13,000 $500 in monthly child support for his three kids with former fiance Crystal Espinal. So right now, Mr. Hill crushing it on the field, apparently crushing it in the bedrooms around North America, and getting it done right now as the cheetah continues to be in the news here in this off season. And yet, his wife is also, pregnant as well. I could think we could all relate that if that were our households, I'm not sure any of us would be alive to matriculate with so many females and have so many kids and still be married at the same time. But it's a good job if you can get it out there Tyreek, by the way, $2,500 a month or $10,000 a month. You know, I've raised three kids, and at no time was I making $10,000 a month. I'm just saying. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the number that she wants. She just wants to live that highfalutin lifestyle and using that kid as a pawn in which to do that. But at least according to the courts, Tyreek's going to take care of that child as well, and hopefully he takes care of all of them as he'll continue to make substantial dollars in the National Football League with what he's doing there as well. And by the way, he said his quarterback should be making some big dollars this offseason as well. Coming up top of the hour, your calls, 1-800-636-1067. Talked about a number of different topics. Jaden Daniels, obviously the Nationals with a win in Milwaukee, and of course the debut of Summer League and the young parts for the Wizards, at least on the surface, with a successful debut. That and anything else you have on your mind, let's go. 1-800-636-1067. Pete on Sports with you till 3:40 right here on 106.7 The Fan. Welcome back. You and me till 3:40 this afternoon. Max Ames is doing all the hard work. Make sure you say hello when you call in this afternoon. 1-800-636-1067. Couple of wacky stories to talk about. There was a story I read on Robert Latall's great site, Black Sports Online. Local story here, it turns out, about how these two ladies essentially had this guy as a sugar daddy and allegedly knocked him off, cut his thumb off so they could still use his thumbprint to keep accessing his cash from his Cash App while they were, while the person was obviously dead. you talk about things, the things that people will do to access cash these days. Just ask that corridor right now. I mean, look, but that corridor on Route 50 between Annapolis and D.C. is a dangerous place right now. A lot of bad things that are happening in that area. Our man, look, if you listen to me, I've told you time and time again, I think Tyreek Hill is the most exciting player to watch in pro football right now. Apparently, Tyreek Hill is the most exciting man, though, to get in the bedroom. A lot of women have apparently entrusted, allegedly, the services of Mr. Hill of late. I'm sure you've seen the headlines by now. But Tyreek Hill apparently right now is juggling five different pregnancies or five different kids. Another lady, a DNA test proved he's the father of this child. And his wife is also pregnant at the same time. So the 30-year-old wide receiver could have as many as 10 children around the nation if all the rumors are to be true. His wife, the wellness influencer herself, Keita Vaccaro, is also expecting a baby, which would be their first together. And a Broward County judge ruled this week that the 8-time Pro Bowler is the father of Trey Love Hill, who was born on May 2nd of last year. The Tots mom, Kimberly Kaylee Baker, filed a paternity test suit that same month, claiming the newborn was conceived during an August 2022 hookup with Hill. She said she was receiving $2,500 from him each month, but estimated the real cost of caring for their daughter was closer to $10,000 a month. The father has, in fact, demonstrated utter and abject unconcern for the child and wholly failing to act as a parent and completely failing to support the child, according to Baker's alleged petition. Hill didn't contest the results of a DNA test, but argued unsuccessfully that California-based Baker had no grounds to file for paternity in Florida, where he lives and works. A court order published Monday confirms the pair reached a confidential paternity agreement backed by the signing of an NDA. The respondent is the natural and biological father of the child, according to the document. And Hill is already paying $13,500 in monthly child support for his three kids with former fiance Crystal Espinal. So right now, Mr. Hill crushing it on the field, apparently crushing it in the bedrooms around North America, and getting it done right now as the Cheetah continues to be in the news here in this offseason. And yet his wife is also, pregnant as well. I could think we could all relate that if that were our households, I'm not sure any of us would be alive to matriculate with so many females and have so many kids and still be married at the same time. But it's a good job if you can get it out there. Tyreek, by the way, $2,500 a month or $10,000 a month. I've raised three kids, and at no time was I making $10,000 a month. I'm just saying. I'm not sure that that's necessarily the number that she wants. She just wants to live that highfalutin lifestyle and using that kid as a pawn in which to do that. But at least according to the courts, Tyreek's going to take care of that child as well, and hopefully he takes care of all of them as he'll continue to make substantial dollars in the National Football League with what he's doing there as well. And by the way, he said his quarterback should be making some big dollars this offseason as well. Coming up top of the hour, your calls, 1-800-636-1067. Talked about a number of different topics. Jaden Daniels, obviously the Nationals with a win in Milwaukee, and of course the debut of Summer League and the young parts for the Wizards, at least on the surface, with a successful debut. That and anything else you have on your mind, let's go. 1-800-636-1067. Pete on Sports with you till 3:40 right here on 106.7 The Fan.
From the mind of a 2-foot-tall talking spokes puppet comes this year's biggest challenge. It's time for Bob's Dare to Compare, the hottest game show on TV that asks, what happens when you compare Bob's to the competition? You get style. You get quality. You get beeps and boops and dings and whomps. And thousands of dollars in savings. Everyone's a winner when you dare to compare with Bob's Discount Furniture. Shop in-store or at mybobs.com to play now.
I'm John Aran, and I have a new podcast called The Varsity. I will bring on the smartest people I know to break down the hottest topics in sports media. Available now on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.